Mr. Gonzalez, you may come forward. Mr. Gonzalez, you may come forward to council table.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We're going to take a brief recess, and I just wanted to place something on the record before doing so. We'll take appearances in the matter of Ralph Alexander Gonzalez.
Ochin Kim, Deputy Ethics Counsel for the Office of Attorney Ethics.
Good afternoon, Terry Lodge, representing Ralph Gonzalez, and Mr. Gonzalez is President Council Table.
Good afternoon. Please be seated, everyone. Mr. Gonzalez, you'll have the opportunity at the end of council's arguments to address the court, and I wanted to underscore one point before we take a brief recess, and then we'll come back, and that is the record in this case raises concerns, and I want to underscore the importance of candor before this tribunal. We have a recommendation to the court from the DRB about a one-year suspension, and the DRB and the DEC before had found that your testimony was not credible. We're not prejudging the matter. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from your counsel. But be aware that if the court were to conclude that you were not candid with us today, there is no limit to the penalty that might be imposed, up to and including disbarment. I want to give you and your attorney an opportunity to speak with one another so that you're not caught flat-footed before you present to the court, if that's your choice. And again, we'll proceed within the matter of Ralph Alexander Gonzalez, and Justice Solomon may be participating in this matter. Ms. Kim.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, Associate Justices, Judge Sabatino. This attorney discipline matter is before the court based upon the recommendation of the Disciplinary Review Board by a vote of 7-1 that respondent Ralph Alexander Gonzalez be suspended for 1 year for his found misconduct below. The OAE relies upon the hearing record below as well as the detailed recommendation of the review board. The OAE does comment that in the light of Mr. Gonzalez's disciplinary history, including a violation of abusing someone else's driver's license when he was pulled over by law enforcement, that Mr. Gonzalez was on notice to be that much more diligent about his identity, particularly during a term of suspension when he, in his words, assisted a friend by giving moral support at the Motor Vehicle Commission during his friend's possible suspension hearing. As the court noted prior to the recess, the hearing panel and the board found that Mr. Gonzalez's waffling about whether he actually represented himself as an attorney at the Motor Vehicle Commission or as another attorney by presenting that other attorney's business card calls into account, frankly, his character. The OAE does agree with the board that a one-year suspension is appropriate because that in itself is a very harsh sanction. Of course, should the court decide otherwise, it may impose more harsh discipline. But the OAE does respectfully submit that a one-year suspension is warranted for the found violations.
As to whether Mr. Gonzalez handed over a business card with another attorney's name, what is your position on that? You used the term waffling. He said he didn't do it. What's your position on that based on your review of the record?
Given that this was a matter in the district ethics board committee, I'm the OAE liaison, and I do recall speaking with the investigator and also seeing the grievance when it came into our office. The written statements of the personnel from the Motor Vehicle Commission, and I believe it was reviewed by their counsel before submission to the Office of Attorney Ethics before it went to the district. I was very direct and detailed that that business card was presented by Mr. Gonzalez. Recollections being what they are, by the time the matter came to a hearing, that particular Motor Vehicle Commission personnel was not as clear in her testimony. But the actual report of the unethical conduct was very clear that it was Mr. Gonzalez who provided a business card belonging to another attorney to personnel as proof of who he was.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, Ms. Kim.
Thank you.
Ms. Lodge.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court. Mr. Gonzalez recognizes the factual findings by the panel, and he recognizes the factual findings by the Disciplinary Review Board. However, since this matter is before this court on de novo review, he does continue to ask this court to find that the allegations have not been proven by clear and convincing evidence. Our brief and those submitted below by counsel below set forth the reasons that Mr. Gonzalez says that, and the crux of this matter is that his reality stems from his intentions and from the events that occurred in his presence on that day. Mr. Gonzalez testified that he was friends with Christopher Stoner, and that Mr. Stoner told him that he had already scheduled a conference with the Motor Vehicle Commission regarding some points on his driver's license. Respondent had personal, not professional, experience with that kind of a matter from many, many years previous, and he agreed that it's generally a good idea to attend that kind of conference. Mr. Stoner had no ride that day, which was probably the reason that a postponement was requested, or I'm sorry, was considered, and ultimately respondent offered to drive him and to go with his friend for moral support. His friend had no ride. Regarding that postponement, Mr. Gonzalez does not recall making that phone call. That's not wavering. He simply didn't recall it. And he said, I don't remember making that call, but if I did, I wouldn't have identified myself as an attorney. And that is credible. Mr. Gonzalez is a solo practitioner. He doesn't have a secretary. He works out of his home. And he has a busy municipal court practice. So the kind of call where you, where lawyers are calling just to adjourn things, that's a pretty rote thing that he would do and something he would do very often. So specifically remembering that he made such a call, given his 30 years of practice making such calls, would really be like remembering an ordinary meal. There was nothing unordinary about it at that time.
The phone numbers that were left on that message were for Mr. Gonzalez's law office?
They were. It was Mr. Gonzalez's home and Mr. Gonzalez's cell phone, but Mr. Gonzalez uses those numbers professionally. It's likely that Mr. Gonzalez made that call. He simply doesn't recall making that call. It's also possible that Mr. Stoner made the call and left the number for Mr. Gonzalez. We don't know for sure, but regardless,
I think it's possible Mr. Stoner made the call and identified himself as Mr. Gonzalez?
No, but it's possible that Mr. Stoner made the call and said, I'm calling to see about getting a continuance. My attorney is Mr. Gonzalez, and these are his numbers. We don't know. We don't have a record of the actual call. Regardless, Mr. Gonzalez isn't adamant that he didn't make the call. He simply does not recall making such a call. And again, he would have made probably thousands of calls like that during his practice. I would submit that if he did make the call, Mr. Madalanio of the Motor Vehicle Commission testified that this was a call to request information about how to seek a postponement. It was a call for information. There was no letter after that requesting a postponement. There was no entry of appearance. And I submit that making a telephone call to ask for information is not practicing law. I recognize what was found below. But simply calling and saying, if I need a postponement, how do I request it, is not practicing law. Similarly, if he called and said, this is attorney Ralph Gonzalez, and I just need information on how to request a postponement, merely saying that he was an attorney was not practicing law, and it was not a misrepresentation. Mr. Gonzalez is, in fact, an attorney, even if he was suspended. That was the finding of the panel. The Disciplinary Review Board disagreed. I submit that the panel was correct. Turning to what happened in Mr. Gonzalez's, out of Mr. Gonzalez's presence, Mr. Gonzalez did drive Mr. Stoner to the Motor Vehicle Commission. Mr. Stoner went in without him. That's not contested. It appears that Mr. Stoner must have said, I'm waiting for my attorney, because there's a notation that Mr. Stoner came in and what time he came in. Underneath that, it says attorney, and there's no time listed. It says ATTY right under his name. No time is listed for the attorney coming in, because Mr. Gonzalez never approached anyone at the MVC saying, I'm here, I'm the attorney. He merely sat down with his friend. Mr. Gonzalez was not there when Mr. Stoner signed in, and he didn't know what happened. He didn't know that Mr. Stoner had identified him as an attorney.
As to Mr. Underwood, counsel.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
All right.
Reading glasses.
What is his relationship, if any, with your client?
Mr. Underwood is an attorney who is one of many, many attorneys who refers work to Mr. Gonzalez, primarily coverage issues in municipal courts. Mr. Underwood testified. Mr. Underwood was aware of what had happened with the business card. He said that he did not give his business card to Mr. Stoner that he knew of. Mr. Stoner was not a client of the firm, but that he hands his business card out regularly in public situations. Notwithstanding that he knew what was happening in this matter, he still was referring work to Mr. Gonzalez at the time that he testified, and he still was friendly with Mr. Gonzalez and thought that he was a credible person.
Did he say anything about whether he provided business cards to Mr. Gonzalez?
I don't think he said whether he provided Mr. Gonzalez with any business cards. I don't recall that in the testimony. I suppose Mr. Gonzalez could get the card, like Mr. Stoner could get the card. They were publicly given out cards. Mr. Gonzalez did have a relationship with the firm. He did not work at the firm. After Mr. Stoner signed in and said there was an attorney, there was a bit of a snowball effect. Mr. Gonzalez came in, sat with his friend, and Ms. Burrows called Mr. Stoner's name, was handed the sheet that said attorney, and she assumed that the two men approaching her, one was an attorney. Mr. Gonzalez did not know she was assuming that, and he did not say he was an attorney. In his head, he was there as a friend. He had not entered an appearance. He didn't know what Mr. Stoner had said. And importantly, he was not dressed as a lawyer. He came in street clothes. That is not insignificant. That matters. If he was there as an attorney and in his mind thought he was there as an attorney, he would have been in a suit. He would have been dressed like a lawyer, and he wasn't. He didn't know that anyone was assuming that he was a lawyer, and he didn't know that only lawyers were permitted in the back part of the building where the conference was being held. There were no signs, and no one told him, and no one asked him. No one asked him if he was a lawyer, and that's important. Instead, what happened was he went into the back with Mr. Stoner, and Ms. Burrows said, you know, good afternoon or good morning, I need identification, and Mr. Stoner handed his driver's license, and Mr. Gonzalez said, mine is in the car, and he left. To this point, that was the entire exchange that he had with Ms. Burrows, and in fact, that was always going to be the entire exchange he had with Ms. Burrows. He said, my license is in my car, and he left. Now, Ms. Burrows testified that before he left, he handed Ms. Burrows John Underwood's business card. And Mr. Gonzalez does deny that he did that. Mr. Gonzalez went to his car to get his identification. And again, for the second time, Mr. Stoner was alone in the MVC without Mr. Gonzalez. According to Ms. Burrows, Mr. Stoner made various representations, including that Mr. Gonzalez's name was John. It is likely that that's when he would have handed her John Underwood's business card. We don't know, but that's the assumption, because Mr. Gonzalez did not hand her the business card.
Can you explain for us why it is that Mr. Stoner, being helped by Mr. Gonzalez, his friend, whose name he knows, would hand over a business card with the name John Underwood? Is there any logic behind that?
The only thoughts we have about that, Your Honor, are that Mr. Stoner, who we now know was a somewhat nefarious individual, knew that his friend was suspended. He knew that his friend wasn't supposed to be there as a lawyer. And when his friend left, he started saying things to Ms. Burrows that didn't make any sense, things that were not true. So we surmise that in some misguided attempt, he thought he was protecting his friend, because the things that he said had no basis in fact. They were not ultimately admitted into evidence, because they were deemed to be hearsay. But they were things that the court's aware of them, that he met Mr. Gonzalez in a diner, that he gave Mr. Gonzalez $500. Somehow this might have been giving Mr. Gonzalez, and he said that Mr. Gonzalez was John. Somehow this must have been giving them, he must have thought that gave Mr. Gonzalez some out or something. We don't really know, because we weren't there.
How would he have obtained a business card from John Underwood? Do you know?
The only way that we imagine that happened is in a municipal court or somewhere public. We don't know. Mr. Gonzalez has relationships with many, many lawyers in the area. Mr. Gonzalez practices in every municipal court. Mr. Gonzalez has been a practicing lawyer in South Jersey for over 30 years now. So it's not just a crazy coincidence that he happened to get a business card of somebody that Mr. Gonzalez does some work with, because Mr. Gonzalez does some work with many, many municipal court lawyers.
Ms. Burrows, in her statement, as you know, made clear that Mr. Gonzalez gave her the card. Any reason for the court to think she got that wrong?
Yes. We submit that she misrecalls, Your Honor. We know that her recall is imperfect, and we know that because she recalls that Mr. Stoner was white. She recalls that he was Caucasian. And first of all, of course, she's just a person, so a significant amount of time had passed, and there was nothing particularly unusual about the case at that point, so she just may have misrecalled as just a witness, but we know that her recollection in general is not perfect because of the race issue. She is sure that Mr. Stoner was white. In fact, he is black. And we know that it was the black Mr. Stoner that appeared at the conference that day, because he showed a driver's license. And there's only one person in New Jersey named Christopher Stoner that has a driver's license, and he is black. And it's this Mr. Stoner. We also know that the black Mr. Stoner came that day because the black Mr. Stoner is the one at issue, because when the panel tried to subpoena Mr. Stoner, they found that he was in jail. That's the black Mr. Stoner. Any indication that's in the record that for some reason Mr. Gonzalez came there with a white person claiming to be Mr. Stoner is just ludicrous. It's just crazy. But most significantly, the Mr. Stoner that was there had a driver's license. It is not at all believable that a white Mr. Stoner for some reason showed up with a fake driver's license at the Division of Motor Vehicles. Like, that just, everything about that is crazy. It is much, much more likely that Ms. Burrows simply misrecalled the race of the person that she dealt with. Her recollection is not perfect. And we believe that she also misrecalled who handed her the license, and that the business card, and it makes more sense that he did that exactly when he said, Mr. Gonzalez, the person I'm with is named John, here is his business card.
When you say he, you're referring to Stoner.
Stoner would have done that. Stoner was alone with Ms. Burrows. The only conversation Mr. Gonzalez ever had with Ms. Burrows was, you need identification, I don't have it with me, it must be in my car, and he left. He never spoke to her again, and that's all he ever said to her.
When did Mr. Stoner reportedly say, I'm with John?
When Mr. Gonzalez went back to his car to get his driver's license, he was alone with Ms. Burrows. And that's what he made, a variety of statements that just have no bearing in fact.
And where in the record is that statement?
That is in the report, which, excuse, I may have it right here. It's in Ms. Burrow's testimony. It's also in Mr. Nocera's testimony. And it's in the report that was written by Mr. Nocera. And I could tell you what exhibit number it is, if you'd like.
That all three of them made reference to the identification, to the statement, "I'm with John"? That's what I'm asking.
Supposedly Ms. Burrows told Mr. Nocera, who put it in his report. Mr. Nocera wrote a report in this matter, which is a marked exhibit. And Ms. Burrows testified to that. Ms. Burrows testified that when Mr. Gonzalez went back to his car, Your Honor, I think this is the problem. Mr. Stoner's statements were acknowledged to be hearsay by the panel, by the presenter. When the report was submitted to the court, I believe Mr. Stoner's comments were deleted, were extracted because they were deemed to be hearsay. But the testimony about them is still in the transcript. Ms. Burrows testified that when Mr. Gonzalez went back to his car, that's when Mr. Stoner made a number of statements that he had met Mr. Gonzalez in a diner, that Mr. Gonzalez's name was John. And those were statements that Mr.
That was excluded on hearsay grounds?
It was. It wasn't excluded by, it was, I believe, withdrawn. In fact, in its brief, Mr. Gonzalez's attorney talked about why the hearsay should be excluded, and the presenter responded with, we're not using that evidence. We're not using that evidence. I don't know that a ruling was ever made to exclude it. The presenter simply said, we're not going to use that evidence. We think there's enough evidence without it.
You don't happen to have citations for those two, or do you?
I can, Your Honor, if you'd like to give me a moment.
If it's too difficult to do so now, tell us, and you can provide that to the clerk of the court.
Why don't I do that, Your Honor? It's definitely in the transcripts, it's definitely in my brief, and it's definitely in the...
Okay.
Report, and I'd be happy to provide everything to the court. Have I answered those questions?
Yes.
Okay. Other than the issue with this business card, both Ms. Burrows and Mr. Nocera confirm that respondent never said he was John Underwood. Stoner never called him John in anyone's presence, and he never said he was a lawyer. So everything really comes down to statements that were made by Mr. Stoner.
What about Mr. Nocera? did he comment? I'm looking at the DRB opinion. Mm-hmm. That respondent said he was there on behalf of another firm, not his law office.
Yes, Your Honor. What happened was, after this brief interaction that Mr. Gonzalez had with Ms. Burrows, he went back to his car. He realized his driver's license was not there, and he came back in. He never dealt with Ms. Burrows again. Mr. Nacera was there. On his way in, Mr. Gonzalez called the law firm that was across the street to see if anyone there would come over, because things were starting to feel not right to him. He was worried that things maybe had changed over time and that now, for some reason, Mr. Stoner should have an attorney, and he was seeing if a friend could come from across the street. And he was on the phone with that law firm when he walked back in, and he ran into Mr. Nacera. And Mr. Nacera asked if he was there on behalf of himself or another firm. Mr. Nacera confirmed in his testimony that Mr. Gonzalez was, in fact, on the telephone when this happened. And Mr. Gonzalez wasn't really paying attention, and he said another firm. He was talking to another firm at the time. Mr. Nacera said, have them fax over an entry of appearance. Mr. Gonzalez took the information, but then it turned out no one could come from across the street anyway. And that was the end of his interaction. That was his whole interaction with Mr. Nacera. Was, you know, this interaction while he was on the phone, he hung up the phone, he went over to Mr. Stoner, he said, you know, I don't have my ID, I went to my car, it's not there, and he left. And Mr. Stoner went on and conducted the conference.
So Mr. Gonzalez called this other law firm because he thought, what had changed, the charge?
No, Mr. Gonzalez had handled this type of matter for himself personally 30 years earlier, 20 years earlier. He had a lot of points on his license. I think it was 30 years earlier. You didn't need a lawyer at that time, and you don't need a lawyer now. But he became concerned in that moment that maybe since they were needing his identification and he was feeling some tension, that maybe it would be better to see if someone could run over and represent Mr. Stoner. That's all. He didn't know if it had changed, and now he should have counsel. He hadn't looked into this matter because he was only there as a friend.
I'm not sure what tension. I'm sorry.
Does he practice in municipal court?
I'm sorry?
He practices it. Mr. Gonzalez practices in municipal court.
Yes, but this was not municipal court. This is a little bit different. This is when a person has too many points on their motor vehicle, on their driver's license, and they're going to be suspended, they can go in and just sit down and have a conference, and invariably the MVC will either reduce the suspension or get rid of the suspension based on hardship, that kind of thing.
Right.
That's what this was. Mr. Gonzalez had not handled any of these kinds of matters ever as a professional at that time.
What tension are you referring to? According to Mr. Gonzalez's version of events, all that's happened at this point is that he and Mr. Stoner have been asked for identification.
That's correct, Your Honor. But just based upon that interaction and the fact that he was being pressed for identification, I believe Ms. Burrows said, you can give me your social security number. He thought that perhaps a lawyer should come from across the street.
Please go ahead.
So Mr. Stoner went on and he represented himself at this conference. He didn't object. He didn't say, wait, I need my lawyer. He didn't ask for a continuance. He just went and did his conference, as had been the plan. And I would note, going back to the race issue, that the MVC witnesses, they weren't biased in the sense of, you know, witness bias. They had nothing against Mr. Gonzalez particularly. But once they had their statements out, they really doubled down on their statements. So that, as witnesses do, once they said something, they stuck with it and they didn't want to change it. And in as proof of that, Mr. Nacera was asked on day 4 of this hearing whether his testimony on day 1 that Mr. Stoner was white was correct, And he said that he recalled the testimony and it was correct. However, he had never given any such testimony. He didn't say that Mr. Stoner was white on day one. That was Ms. Burrows that said that. The witnesses just want to be right. So they're, and that makes sense. That's what happens with witnesses. And they were doubling down on their false memories or their incorrect memories when they were recounting what really was just a very fleeting couple of contacts with Mr. Gonzalez. And I submit, and Mr. Gonzalez submits, that on those facts, there is not proof by clear and convincing evidence that he violated the RPCs that are that he's charged with in this matter. And I would move on to quantum of discipline, if that pleases the court. Assuming that these violations are established, I submit that a suspension of 6 months and not a year is appropriate. This case, at its worst, is limited to a telephone call for information and Mr. Stoner's conference at the MVC with very brief encounters with the employees there. There's not really a case like that to look to for precedent, but the most like it, which is in my brief, is In Re Rise, R-Y-S, wherein, while ineligible, the attorney entered a notice of appearance, prepared and filed a certification with attachments, and appeared for oral argument in one matter. When questioned, she told the OAE that she was only in court for moral support. The transcript from the court showed that that was not true. Assuming that the facts are proven, that sounds like Mr. Gonzalez's case, except that Rise also did not maintain a trust account, represented a second client in bankruptcy court, told the OAE that she was not in bankruptcy court as an attorney, failed to file her Rule 1:20-20 affidavit, and misrepresented to the OAE. She was ineligible rather than being suspended, but her conduct was worse, and she knew she was ineligible at least after the first bankruptcy matter, and she was only suspended for 6 months. The cases referenced by the DRB as analogous are not analogous. They are Phillips. Phillips represented a divorce client. Phillips, while suspended, represented a divorce client, requested a new date by letter on his letterhead, had prepared the letter and gave it to a pro se adversary to sign. He did not tell his client he was suspended, and he met with the client to help her prepare a cross motion during his suspension. So the conduct was worse. He also provided false information on his Rule 1:20-20B15 affidavit. And his prior misconduct was more recent and worse. This was a 2015 matter. In 2010, he was admonished for similar conduct because he represented a client in Nevada without a license. In 2011, he was censured for lack of diligence, failure to communicate, and misrepresentation in two cases. In 2013, he was censured for lack of diligence and misrepresentation. In 2012, he was suspended for failure to pay costs at a disciplinary matter, and then he was suspended for 3 months in two matters for practicing while suspended and lack of diligence in 2014. So his conduct was worse. His prior discipline was more recent and more serious, and it touched on actual client representation. So Phillips is not really analogous. The other case that the DRB indicated was analogous was In Re Brady, which also is not analogous. That matter involved two complaints, not one complaint, and a suspension for gross neglect, lack of diligence, mixed representation, pattern of neglect. And Mr. Brady submitted letters of representation in three courts, entered guilty pleas, did not tell his clients he was suspended, and appeared in court on 3 occasions. So again, the conduct was more serious, the prior discipline was more serious. So when you compare the facts of these cases, this case is really more like Rise, and I went into many more cases in my brief. I know this court is aware of the cases. In this case, Mr. Gonzalez's prior discipline was not related to client representation. It was mostly in the very distant past, one being 30 years prior. At most, in this case, Mr. Gonzalez made a call for information about an adjournment. He came to the MVC to represent his friend, if you believe those facts. He presented another lawyer's card when asked for identification. The conduct is not as serious, but is more like the conduct in Rise, and we would ask, therefore, that the court, if it finds that the facts have been established, that it order a suspension for 6 months and not 1 year.
Thank you, Ms. Lodge. Mr. Gonzalez, you don't have to address the court. It's entirely optional. Would you like to do so? So please come to the center.
Chief Justice, may I ask a question before I...
Yes, please come to the center.
Oh, I'm sorry, Junior.
That's all. You may stay there, Ms. Lodge.
Thank you.
And if you want a break to speak with your attorney, you're welcome to that as well. Go ahead.
Thank you. Chief Justice, before I say yes, that I'd like to say something to clear a few things up, because I'd like for you justices to understand exactly what took place. I don't think that you have the full record or understanding of what happened. Will I just be answering questions, or will I be able to, in summary, state what it is that took place to perhaps...
No, you can give us a summary and answer questions as they're presented. Would you like to consult with your attorney first? Why don't you do that aside, away from...
I know it's been a long day for you justices, and I apologize that we're even here dealing with this sort of matter right now. In my voice, I still have COVID issues, so my voice may go in and out. But by way of background, if I may give some brief background to myself, I grew up coming here to the United States in 1960 when my parents left Cuba due to the Castro Revolution. I've grown up in the United States my entire life. I came here when I was 6 months old. My parents came with nothing and managed to put me through school. I used to do things as a child in a different era than now, where I had mini bikes and dirt bikes and running from the police and chases, and then they'd come to my house and walk me home with my dirt bike and things of that nature, the kind of stuff that gets people locked up nowadays. Going back to college, my last year of college, I ran from the police for no good reason. I had no good reason at all for doing so. I did so. I wound up getting 50-some points on my license as a result of all the charges that they issued, or however many it was. I also took a severe beating that hospitalized me, and I was put in jail that evening until my parents came to get me out, and until the attorney that I hired came back with pictures and everything showing how they had me on the ground. Broke my two rotator cuffs. One of them held me back while another one kicked me in the face like a field goal, kicking for a football team. And my eye and face was out like this. I've represented, I don't do municipal court work. I wasn't doing any municipal court work at the time, which is why I wanted to explain some of the things that had gone on. I've always wanted to do public defender work and represent people such as myself of color and that are Hispanic. I dealt with much prejudice as I grew up, and I've made my mistakes along the way, and including the first one I did as an attorney when I handed the improper name to a trooper after finishing a case. I've been not before this court, but the appellate court, with regard to a matter of Bodner versus Haddonfield, where I took on a case on my own while I was a second or third year attorney. and handled that matter, suing the city of Haddonfield for not allowing a hot dog vendor to sell hot dogs there. It was on the front page of all the newspapers, New York Times, etc. Point being is that gentleman, I played basketball with him. I've done nothing but play basketball my entire life. It's the only sport I've actually played. I won't say African-American because I don't like that term. I use black and white because not everybody's African or American. And I've grown up my life with Hispanics, blacks, whites. I've been tossed around by both sides because when we played basketball and Spanish guys would say something and I'd relay that to my friends in English, I was called a traitor. And I've been picked on as a Hispanic by Americans. So I've gotten the short end of the stick on both ends. But the point being is that I fled the police back then in college and automatically had that instinct to do so when I was stopped by a trooper 36 or 35 or more years ago, however long ago it was. I took responsibility for that, and I had no problem in doing so because I was wrong for what I did. I respect the law. I respect this court. And the biggest reason I want to speak is because, Your Honor, you mentioned something about my candor. And I must say that that's something that I hold very dear to me. Because an attorney, and I've learned this since, you know, since that time, is, you know, as I say, your word is your bond, and that's very important to me. So I've played basketball in my life with blacks, whites, et cetera, but I've got a lot of friends that are black. I've done favors for them. I've driven them to places. I had one that I hadn't seen in years come and testify for me because he was one of the names that I realized. Say, yeah, Ralph's giving me a ride from my house to Vineland, from Voorhees to Vineland, which is 45 minutes each way, to go play basketball. So I say that because I want you to know I knew Chris. I know his wife. I know his children. I've been to his house. I had a previous counsel, Justin Lockery. I showed him, and I have on my phone, video of me in Chris's house with his dogs, his wife, etc. When Chris told me that he was going to go get this conference done, whatever, for his license, I had to do that when I was a first-year law student, I recall. So that would have been like 1982. I had to do that because when I got a speeding ticket, my license automatically got suspended. And that's what happened in 82. Now, I was clean since then, and it took many, many years for those points to come off your license because I think they take off like 3 points off your license each year. And so what I did was I said to him, he needed a ride. His wife was taking his car. I told him, I'll give you a ride up there. I was in street clothes. We went there. I accompanied him to the back. Nobody said anything to me about whether I was an attorney or not. We go in the back, and they have these little cubicles. It seems very informal. Now, mind you, when I was suspended now for the 3 months, I took down my sign, the phone number. I did everything that I was supposed to do, made sure that I wasn't taking any phone calls from clients. Made absolutely sure that I wasn't doing anything that even remotely resembled practicing law. Now, I gave Chris this ride. He's asked for his license, which he produces. Now, I have two vehicles at home, a 99 Mercedes and a 2010 one. And they're all pieces of crap, but they are what they are. And I don't carry ever a wallet or a money clip. I have a money clip. If I'm going to a store, I'll take the credit card with me. Never the license. It stays in one of the cars. Now, that day, because I was driving Chris, I came in the black car. And I had my license in my blue car, put it to you that way. So when I went out to the car, because I was asked for my license, that's all I was asked for. Do you have a license? I said, no. I went out to get my license. I didn't have my license in that vehicle. When I come back, and I don't know anything that's transpired with Chris and Ms. Burroughs until nearly a year later, other than what he told me in the car going home. And he didn't tell me anything about that car because I know that's a point of contention. But there's a whole litany of things here that happened that make it seem like I'm guilty of something that I'm not. Chris was questioned by Ms. Burroughs as to, I guess, from what my understanding from speaking to him as to what took place and who I was and blah, 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 blah. Chris must have given her a business card because Chris knew that I was suspended and I said, I can't represent you as an attorney. You don't need an attorney, et cetera. Now, apparently he made up a story of how he met me, that he, in other words, he didn't want to give my name. He didn't want to say anything about me that could even remotely get me in trouble somehow, even though I wouldn't have been in trouble. Now, at least I don't think I would have been in trouble because I'm there as a friend. If they'd said to me, you had to step out, I would have stepped out. But I didn't know anything about that. So Chris subsequently tells me after we've left that he told them that he met me at a restaurant or something like that, I think he said. And again, this is going back many years now. I don't even remember 100% clearly exactly what took place because it's been so long. And that apparently he told him that he paid me $500 and he didn't know my name. Now, I don't know where Chris came up with a card. And he's been represented by attorneys. He's had other attorneys represent him in the past. And I don't know whether, I don't think John ever did because I never got to find that out from Chris. But he gave Ms. Burrows a card. If it said John Underwood, so be it. I've handled cases in the past 5 or 6 years, or even sooner before that, with dozens of attorneys in my area, John being one of them, Tom DeMarc, oh, I can go on and name a whole bunch of Richard Huizinga, a whole bunch of Marco Figueredo from this area, of names of people that I've represented, you know, that I've handled cases for. Why Chris did what he did, I can only say is because he was probably trying to, in his mind, somehow protect me, which he shouldn't have done. I don't know anything about this that took place while I was there, because when I came back, I had called Garces' office, Garces and Gabler, which is right across the street from Motor Vehicle, wanting to know if they had to, if something had changed and they had to have an attorney there. That's all that was about. Okay, I didn't go in there to misrepresent myself. I didn't go in there to give anybody a business card that wasn't mine. When I was there, it was all of 2 minutes. That's it. A year later, I get the grievance. I go to Justin Lockery and I say, can we get video to show how I was dressed, to see how long this all took? Nothing. Now everything's gone. Why it took a year for them to even write up this grievance is beyond me, because it could have been straightened out much sooner. Because now at this point, Chris, and this is unbeknownst to me about any criminality that he had, because I wouldn't have associated with him had I known, and this happens sometimes with people, but regardless, he's now involved in a big operation in Camden County for, I don't remember if it was drugs or guns or whatever it was. I had asked him to write to come in to see Justin for an affidavit as to what took place, to take back what he said. He wouldn't do it because he was involved with his criminal case. So whether or not this came into light in your record of what you have, I think is very important, because from the inception, the state or the ethics board, whatever, didn't bring in Chris Stoner, didn't inquire of him. He was in jail. They could have brought him over. I asked for him to be brought over. I had the video showing who he was later on, because this hearings took place over a period of, I'm not even sure anymore if it was a year or close to a year or a month, because we were in person and then COVID happened, and then we would take a day here, a day there, and the testimony was just dragged out forever. The one thing that my counsel aptly pointed out is that Ms. Burrows and Mr. Nucera, who I never even spoke to, I only went in the back room with Ms. Burrows. I left and had no conversation with Mr. Nucera. I think he was contacted, I think, by Ms. Burrows only because of the things that Chris had said to her while he was in the back with her, which I had no knowledge of because I didn't get to speak with him again.
Did he ask you a question? Are you here for your firm or another firm?
I only read that in the grievance. I don't remember him saying anything like that to me. And if anything, what I said when I was on the phone is I'm on the phone with the law firm across the street.
Do you recall anyone asking you a question when you came back in to Motor Vehicles?
Yes, when I came in the door, not in the back cubicle, because I never went back there again to see Chris. He was in the back there. Mr. Nucera approached me, so I didn't understand why he was approaching me, and he told me who he was.
But you don't recall him asking a question?
This was before AirPods and stuff, for me anyway, and I had the phone to my ear, and I was speaking with the secretary over there. I didn't even get to speak to Garces.
What prompted you to reach out to a law firm after having been asked for identification?
Yes, I, okay, again, not that this is in the record or it means anything, but I was just asking them because, well, and probably shouldn't have in hindsight, to be honest, called to see if things had changed there, because I know that they handle those matters because they are directly across the street from motor vehicle, whether you needed an attorney there or not, because when I came in and he started questioning me and I was on the phone with him, they put me on hold. I thought maybe you needed an attorney there. Now, again, I wasn't dressed as an attorney, but I could see where he was kind of going with it, so.
And what, where was, who, I'm sorry, you
I'm
could
sorry,
see
Judge.
Where he was going. Who is it that
Mr.
you're referring
Nucera,
to?
When he started questioning me, it seemed like I had done something wrong.
But you had already reached out to an attorney before your interaction with Mr. Nucera, no?
On my way in, I was on the phone.
So what prompted that?
Not only to ask Judge if they, if their policy there had changed or anything like that from when I was there, maybe 32 or 33 years ago, whatever it was prior to that.
You thought people needed an attorney to go to?
I wanted to know if they did. That was it. I mean, I wanted to know if they did because of the way, you know, they said, you know, you get your identification, and Mr. Nucera then approached me. So when I was on the phone, I didn't hear him say that to me. And again, I don't get this any, I don't get any of this information until a year later when I get, when I received the grievance.
But you recall that he was, Mr. Nucera was questioning you while you were on the phone. He was asking
questions. He was speaking to me, yes. Yes.
He said something to me. At the time, I had no recollection or didn't hear what he was asking you.
Right. Now, I turned around, stepped outside, and at that point, Chris came outside. And I said to him, listen, I don't know what's going on here, but you handle your hearing. I'm going to go get the car, and I'll wait for you. That was the extent of it. Now, how this proceeded to the point of a year later, looking at a grievance that is pages and pages long, was beyond me. So when I went to Justin Lockery, I said to speak to Chris Stoner, let's get him in here. We couldn't get him for the hearing. Nobody brought him in. We could, and I don't know why it couldn't have even been done by via Zoom or some other method at the time, but it wasn't. So what he did was he just objected to everything that Ms. Burrows was saying as relating to Mr. Stoner as hearsay. And there was an objection, a continuing objection placed on the record from day one and each time that we did it, that this would be handled by an appeal, because if it went to an appeal, it would not be admissible. But what they did was, and I say they meaning Burroughs, Nucera, whomever, because I never even spoke to Nucera to have any kind of dialogue with him, is they based everything on the assumption of what Chris was saying to them. They painted, in other words, it got painted in a picture where I came in lying from the get-go. Which was completely incorrect. I mean, I wasn't doing anything.
I have a question. Did you ever make the phone? Did you make the phone call seeking to have his Mr. Stoner's conference at MVC adjourned?
And again, being honest, I'm not going to say no, and I didn't say yes. When I first went to see Justin and read that, I said to him, because again, this was at least a year earlier. I didn't recall that. I recall almost everything about what happened. I do know that Chris is black. I do know I have a video of him, and I was kind of shocked when Ms. Burrows was asked if he was black or white, and she said he was black. Also, he was asked, she was asked by one of the panelists at the ethics hearing if she recalled whether, because she said that I handed her the card. And she was asked whether I handed it from my pants or if I had it in my hand or whatever. She didn't recall any of that, and that's because
with regard to the phone call.
Oh yeah, this is
you
just,
don't.
This is all just within the 1 minute. That
the phone
I went,
call. Do you recall the phone call that Mr. Matalano?
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't recall ever making that phone call, so I can't honestly say that I did or I didn't. And I even said, if I did, it would have been just to ask on his behalf what he would needed to do to get a postponement because he didn't have a ride. It wasn't because I was saying I'm an attorney or I need a postponement for him or I'm going to fax a letter or I'm going to represent him or anything like that. I would never have done anything like that. Absolutely not.
Mr. Gonzalez, the DEC in this case heard the testimony of the witnesses, heard your testimony, found by clear and convincing evidence that you had passed off a business card in order to falsely identify yourself and described your testimony as evasive, combative, self-interested, and credible. Did you hand over the business card that day?
No, Your Honor. And the combative part, and I'm sorry that I'm speaking hyperly like this because I don't normally, I kind of like I'm more subdued when I'm speaking usually in a court matter to a jury and whatnot. But what got me excited was that I was being treated by counsel as some idiot on a witness stand, and he was Perry Mason, continuing to ask me the same question over and over. And I apologize that it comes off that way, but if I said to him, no, I did not, and it wasn't about that question, but what I don't recall exactly what it was, he continued to ask it and ask it and ask it, and I just looked at my attorney like, you know, isn't there a point where we stop that because that it wasn't proper. That's where I seemed, and I'm sure I seemed, to have come off as combative to the panel. But what took place out of my sight and out of my ears is what they based everything on, and that happened between Ms. Burrows and Chris, them two in a cubicle, not even Mr. Nocera. Mr. Nocera didn't even speak to Chris. That's all in the actual testimony of what took place and what brought this forward. And again, why it took a year to come forward boggles my mind.
So you didn't hand over the business card, and based on your understanding of things, it would have been Mr. Stoner who did so.
Well, that's the only thing I can come up with, Judge. I mean, you know, two and two. And I know that circumstantially, this didn't look good. I mean, when I read it, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm guilty of everything because of the way it all sounded. But that's just, like I said, I know Chris had dealings with many attorneys, whether it be for him, his wife, his friends, or whatever the case may have been. I can't even say that he handed the card because I wasn't there to know that. I can only assume that or guess it or whatever you want to call it, because I certainly did not say to her or go like this or whatever and hand her a card that wasn't even mine. First of all, I don't even carry cards. I don't even carry my wallet. And I know that's hard to believe for some people, but I've shown that to my counsel. I've shown that to Mr. Lockery, how I always keep my things in my console of my car.
Mr. Gonzalez, did you have business cards of Mr. Underwood for whatever reason ever in your possession?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know whether I have his business card.
Not now, any time.
Or any time, yeah. I don't know whether I've ever had his business card. I don't need it. I have his cell phone.
You don't have to tell me why you don't need it or you do. Have you ever had in your possession Mr. Underwood's business card?
I don't know. I mean, to honestly say that I know for sure that I've never had it, I don't know. I may have had it years ago. It's possible, but I know that I certainly didn't present it. And I know that what they based everything on was not just on me going there and then leaving to go get my license. It was based upon what Chris said or may have said to Ms. Burrows, because I only know what she's telling me or told the panel that he said and what he did.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, I mean, I thank you very much for your time. I know it's very late in the day, like I said, but I felt it was important for you to know what took place preliminarily with Chris and her and my not even being there, which is the whole hearsay problem of how this snowballed. And I know that motor vehicles has no axe to grind, or the people that testified against me, and it's nothing personal, but it's very poor recollection on the part of Ms. Burrows or even Mr. Nocera to say that I'm the one that handed the card when she's the one that was basically, as he said, Chris said, getting the fifth degree about who I was, et cetera. So that had to have stemmed from him giving her the card. She must have then looked online to see the picture of it. And again, that is just something that snowballed out of control. And in my past, history, I took responsibility for what I did with regard to that license. I did not, and I know these are things that are past, agree with the other matters that are in my record, and I won't get into them at all, but be that as it may, there were circumstances that I feel like I was just taken advantage of. So, but that's all I wanted to say. I just wanted to clear it up as best I could about the record that took place with regard to Mr. Stoner and Ms. Burrows.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez.
You're welcome.
Clerk of the Court, do you have the references?
I do, thank you.
And I agree with Mr. Gonzalez. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. It's in T1, which is the transcript from September 18th, 2019, on page 135. Mr. Loffrey asked Ms. Burrows, did I understand correctly that one of the things that Mr. Stoner said to you was, in words or in substance, I was told by Mr. Gonzalez to call him John? Yes. Question, were those his exact words or do you remember his exact words? Those were his exact words. He told me to call him John. But he, on page 136, but he never called him John in the indiscernible office. Is that right? Not that I recall. So that's the reference to, that's the transcript reference to Ms. Burrows testifying that Mr. Stoner was talking about Mr. Gonzalez calling, instructing him to call him John. And in the report by Jack Nacera, which is Exhibit P8, Mr. Nacera wrote, Barbara questioned Mr. Stoner on how he found his attorney, and he said online. He said he never met him at his office. He met at different locations, at times for lunch, etc. He said to call him John, and he gave him $500 to represent him at the pre-hearing conference. And those are the assertions that we submit were fabricated for some reason by Mr. Stoner, perhaps in a misguided attempt to somehow protect Mr. Gonzalez. And Mr. Gonzalez was never aware that those assertions were made until he received the grievance. Thank you.
Thank you. Court's in recess for the day. We'll take the matter under advisement.